I've got another thought to add. Right to work, so-called right to work legislation, aka union busting legislation, aka lower the wages of the working men and women legislation, is coming to Oregon, and we've got to fight. If you're interested in learning more about the heritage of unions, Local 290 is offering a class. It's going to be April 25th. If you want to find out more information or try to sign up, go to ua290.org. Also, I got a memo in my box today I want to tell you guys about. This is from Jobs with Justice. They're excited to announce their 24th annual celebration and invite you to attend the 2015 Justice for All annual dinner on Friday, May 29th at PSU's University Place. If you want to get together with some like-minded labor individuals and support the labor movement, go to their website to check for prices and sign up. Their website is www.jwjpdx.org. And that's just about all the time that we have tonight. Thanks, everyone out there. Keep up the good fight, and we'll see you next time.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. There'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to kboo.fm and click on the right side for community events.
The time is 6:32 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Prison Pipeline.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline. I am your host, Sarah Vitak, and tonight we are going to be talking about undocumented populations, how they are incarcerated, and why it matters. We have two great guests on the show tonight, so I am going to go ahead and let them introduce themselves.
I'm Romeo Sosa. I'm the executive director of VOS, Worker Rights Education Project. Basically, we organize day laborers, and also we have a worker center we call Martin Luther King Jr., where we connect people with jobs.
My name is Jonathan Irwin. Among other things, I'm a volunteer street medic and a nursing student, but I'm here today to talk about some of my experiences volunteering with No More Deaths, or No Más Muertes, which tries to reduce death and suffering on the U.S.-Mexico border through various kinds of humanitarian aid.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for being here today. I'm really excited to have you both as guests. And first, I wanted to talk a little bit about who the big players are in incarcerating undocumented individuals. And earlier we were chatting, and Jonathan, I think you were mentioning G4S. So could you go ahead and explain a little bit about who they are and what they do?
Yeah, G4S, or Global Force Securicorps, is a company that kind of came out of the overarching umbrella that was like Blackwater and some other group, Geo Group, they used to be tied to. And in the U.S., what they do is they do immigrant detainee transport. So Border Guard picks people up at gunpoint, transports them to vans, where they're then stuck in a van, oftentimes without food or water for many hours, and they're armed guards, and they transport them. They're very proud of the work they do. Globally, they're involved in just about everything bad. They run private prisons.
I was going to say, this is private?
Yeah, they're a private corporation. They're the world's largest private security business. In Palestine, they also, they have, like, their own, like, roles in terms of, like, maintaining the, like, the border, like, the wall against Gaza, around Gaza and around the West Bank. And they run security for, like, police stations in the West Bank, which are basically occupying police stations. Or, like, settlements, and, like, they run private prisons in Australia and all over the world. They've been getting in trouble for their role in perpetrating oftentimes torture and, like, other things, or at least being complicit in it.
Mm-hmm.
In Portland, they have a bid, or actually, no, they don't have a bid. They have a contract with the city of Portland providing security for many city buildings, including City Hall, as well as with TriMet offering their security. People used to be more used to seeing them as Whack and Hut. That used to be also in the same family, so it's, like, changes over and over and over again. But, yeah, they're pretty bad everywhere.
And so the other group I think we're going to hear a lot about today is ICE. So, Romeo, do you think you could tell us a little bit about what ICE is and what they do?
Yeah, ICE is the Immigration Custom Enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, used to be INS before, Immigration Naturalization Services.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the people that go, like, arrest people in homes and do, like, big raids. So lately, they changed the strategy. If you knew, in 2007, that was the biggest raid happened in Portland, Oregon, that where they arrested about 160,000 people.
In their homes?
No. It happened in one of the company in Del Monte. And that they call that the biggest raid that in the history of Portland. But lately, they have, like, so many new programs. They're using the technology. There's a program they call Secure Communities. When you get arrested and for anything, you know, maybe because right now in the state of Oregon, you can't have access to driver license because you are undocumented. So even if you got stopped by police without license and while they find who you are, so they take you to jail. As soon as you get to jail, there's the secure community. It's like a fingerprint thing. So as soon as you put the fingerprint in there, that information goes to FBI, and now it goes to the ICE. So if ICE in their system, they cannot find you, so just put a hold on you. Who is that person? Hold for a while. And it's been happening for many years in Portland. So they hold a person in ICE camps, and so they pick them up and take it. And they work together with GEO, with the private prisons that they send it to them. They have their own, like you mentioned, vans. They transport them to there, and then they deport them there.
And so why is that a bad thing?
It doesn't work for community. People, they are afraid to work, even to call the police for any crime they can see. And it's a public safety, basically. And also, the police should not work as an immigration agent. They are totally separate. They have a totally two entity. But now that collaboration, it's make unsecure our community,
right,
and not safe, basically, because any undocumented can be, we have a lot of cases that show that it doesn't work, that program. Some of the women, they call the police, and because domestic violence, and the women end up in deportation because it doesn't have paper. So how can you trust the police in that kind of situation? Or undocumented, they see any crime, they are afraid to call the police because they don't want to be involved in any of issue that they end up deporting. You know, I think if you can understand that part of the dangers of any program, it's not good for the entire community. Here in Portland, we're fighting to make sure that to stop any deportation.
Romeo, can you tell us a little bit more about what VOS is doing and some of the cases that you guys are working on?
Last year, I received a phone call from Francisco Aguirre that he told me ICE is outside of my home. So I immediately mobilized the community. I have contacts, and some of them, they even put in Facebook. Half an hour later, the community show up, even some of the media, to document what's going on. And we end up that ICE, he went to his house and supposed to be to see if he's there, but at the same time, they don't have any order to arrest him, basically, by mm-hmm. a judge. So he asked if there is like an order by a judge, and they said yes, but we don't have it right now. So they left, and they say there is no information at all that exchanged, but yes, there is somehow. Yeah. They know he has a DUI, that's why he got arrested, and the DUI he already done, and he has a court for that. He needs to follow up with the mm-hmm. court, but they end up ICE in his home. So how can ICE know this problem, you know? So the case of Francisco, it was like a big mobilization of the community. Even he was for 80 days in sanctuary because he doesn't feel safe. He lived in the Augustana Lutheran Church for 80 days until we make public pressure visit, even at like some of the like decision making people to stop his deportation. And one of the things we just want to say that we want to treat every person the same, not more and not less. Like, we are not saying that they don't have to go to the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. but every person, whatever they have, they should go to that process.
Yeah.
But connecting with ICE, that's the piece that we don't really want in our community, because they're not really, when you end up in deportation, that's a very different thing. Like you kind of like you lose everything. You lose your future, you lose your job, you lose almost your family, you know. And some of them, they have been deported to their country, which they don't know. Like, they live more years here than there, so they don't know the community over there.
And what other kind of cases do you guys get?
One of the cases, they went to looking for a person in that house. So the person is in that house, but there's other people lived in that house. So they end up take the whole group, the whole people who live in that house, and all of them, they are in deportation. There are like five of them, and one of the women, they let her free, but the four of them, they still in jail. The only reason they are in Tacoma, it's because they don't have no documentation. They didn't commit any crime. They find the person who are there looking for. But unfortunately, they end up in this situation. And that's like so many cases that happen in our community.
And so obviously they don't have arrest warrants for these people. That's what you're saying? No.
They don't have. They don't even have like a criminal record. So the only record they have is that not have documentation in this country.
Earlier, you mentioned that this sort of can destroy futures and families. Can you talk a little bit more about that and what you've seen in our community?
Yeah, like some of the cases like I have seen, the people or the person who bring bread to the table are the guy who got arrested. when the person bring the bread to the table, it's gone, so the entire family, it suffer. And they don't know how to keep living in the apartment. They don't know how to get food. Just a simple, a basic thing. And some of them, they have children in schools. And so they stop basically everything.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, they have to move to their sister, to another family, or to a friend, because they don't have the money to survive. So they kill all the future of that family. So it's affect mentally, emotionally, psychologically, whatever you call, for that person. Some of them I have seen of the family, they don't want even go outside because also they are undocumented and they don't want to see the police, or they don't want even go to the church because they are afraid to go. Any encounter with law enforcement, it's kind of afraid to end up in deportation.
Yeah. So can we go over to Jonathan if you have something to add?
Yeah. I think that what Romeo brought up, I think, is a really great point, which is that even if you believe in the criminal, I would call it injustice system, which I don't believe in it. But even if you do, it doesn't actually kind of make sense at a certain point, right? Like it would decreases protections for communities, and it's kind of ineffective, right? It ends up criminalizing people en masse that aren't actually causing any risks, right? And it's also ineffective because if your entire family lives in Portland or in Phoenix or in Hood River, which many people's families do, if you're deported, you're not going to stay away if it's at all humanly possible, right? So you're going to try to come back, and that ends up kind of fueling that system. And there's kind of a lot of the way that the structure of the border enforcement is set up is it's really quite ridiculous, right? Because on the one hand, you end up having a hyper-militarized space where there's like people with big guns and cars and it's like sensors and cameras all over the place and helicopters. And at the same time, huge numbers of people cross, right? And then like a helicopter will fly down and what they'll call is like dust them, will like drive up a lot of dust and scare people so they disappear into the desert, mm-hmm. and they won't arrest anyone, right? So why would you do that? It's like at a point it's actually just to see people die or put people in incredibly precarious situations where they can be victimized by like really crummy guides, right? Like there are crummy guides. There's some good ones too, but like puts people at risk. And then you have to be like, wait, what's the point? Well, it's kind of like Romero was talking about, to put people in these private prisons, like Corrections Corporations of America or the GEO Group, and to earn political capital and be able to, you know, make cases on that. And I just wanted to also mention kind of the way that some of that incarceration happens on the border is through a program called Operation Streamline, which also started back kind of around that 2007 area. And they have it all along the border, and like certain areas they resisted, like installing it in other ways not. And it's basically a like dedicated courtroom which does nothing but process hundreds. In this area of Tucson, it's like 70 tops a day, but in like parts of Texas, it's like up to 200 people a day. Sometimes with no more than like a single lawyer in Tucson, they have to have like seven or something. And you can sit in on it as a member of the public, and you can watch like eight people at a time be asked by a judge to walk through things, and one by one they waive their rights to a judgment, because everybody, regardless of their history, pretty much is given two charges, a like misdemeanor illegal entry and a felony illegal reentry, and they're all given the same plea deal, which is plead guilty to illegal entry and we'll waive you the felony. And then that creates a record so that if people then reenter, then they can get incarcerated for longer. And it just ends up being this cycle of kind of real tragedy for everyone except for the prison industry, which needs a way of kind of expanding constantly, right? And for the politicians who need a way or justification to win this or that campaign or come off as really strong in the face of the public. So just kind of wanted to add into that. And it's in terms of the... I think it's absolutely right what Romeo talks about, the importance of like a lot of community response, and like the border that Latino community is very strong, and like there's other supporters too who like turn up and go, spending a lot of hard and hot hours out in the desert trying to find people. The border guard does say that they do some recovery, and they do a very limited amount. There's a really interesting film actually called Who is Diane Cristal, which is about a man who was found in the desert with two tattooed names on him. And it's kind of weird because it's told from the perspective of the sheriffs, which is kind of bizarre. But it does also, I think, a really good job of representing kind of the perils of that journey and like what people face, and kind of humanizing people.
Romeo, do you have anything to add to that?
In the last couple years that so many children's, they're crossing the border. And this is for the first time in the United States they have seen this new people crossing the border, and also to know what's going on, basically, why children, they're like children between 5 to 18 years old, crossing the border by themselves. And also I have some contact with children's here in Oregon, telling me how they crossed the border and also how they've been treated in kind of like prisons, but it's they call kind of like shelters. And here locally we have kind of like those shelters, and we have those kids kind of like in jail. So this not only when I say undocumented adults or what's going on in the community, but also this case, it's when it went all over the world. Like it's a unique thing that children's, they're even exposing their lives to come to meet their fathers, or escaping from poverty. There's so many cases, and some of the children's that where I know, they need immediately like legal help,
mm-hmm.
you know, food and basic thing, a place to live, you know.
So but if the children are, they can't be arrested, right? So they're, what happens if you're a child and you're crossing the border and then you're...
They're arrested.
Really?
So they have like... So the prisons or whatever, the shelters in Arizona and Texas, it's not enough. So they've been sending children here in Portland. So, and there are, and we don't know exactly because it's everything, it's kind of confidential by them to not saying where they are. But we want to work with them, but they are here. So some of the children that they got out, they're not really in... got out from the jail from here. We call jail because it's there. They have, it's like the rules, it's like a jail. You know, there's no way to someone to visit them. There's mm-hmm. no way to, they can go out. There's like, yes, they are in jail.
Yeah.
And they have to go to court when they let them out. So they have like a court date. It's like any one who are arrested in the border.
So they call it basically a shelter, but they're being detained there.
They've been detained. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. That is incredible. And so then they get a court date, they're actually like
if they win the case, so they can stay here. If they don't,
they're deported.
They deport them.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was kind of big things in the in the last couple of years that it's happening at the border. Some of us work with other countries, like especially Salvadorians, Guatemalan, Hondurians, Central America, basically. Most that the children, where they are from. And one of a group of us went to El Salvador directly. What's going on there? Why the new... And they have arrested for, I don't remember how many thousand of children in the last couple of years. And so it was brought to the government that they should be treated like as a kid, you know, instead of a criminal. That's the way they are treating the children who are crossing the border. And so there's so many reasons that a child, they leave their country. And one of the reasons, it's basically it's poverty. And some of the people, they live in the streets, and they sometimes they turn out like in gangs, or some of them, they are threatened by gangs, so they don't want to live in that situation, so they decide to come to the United States, or some of them, they have families here, they haven't seen them for many years, some of the children, that they just want to see my dad, you know, and they have to take all this journey, long journey, until they cross over, and some of them, they got caught at the border. Yeah.
So what do you see as the biggest issue with this whole, if you could only choose one thing to pinpoint that could be changed easily?
I think one thing that we can change a lot in the life of the people is to give documentation to anyone, you know, and to not really live in fear. But recently just approved the executive order of Obama. So the people who qualify for that, they are people who have kids, U.S. citizen. But the rest of them, they're not qualified. So I think what we are looking for is fighting for a legalization for all. You know, immigration reform that includes everyone. Doesn't matter, you know, but it's going to be a long fight. And so we have a lot of things that we are trying to do locally. Stop the deportation is one small step. Stop police-ICE collaboration, it's a step. And also Portland can be a sanctuary city like other cities like San Francisco, where welcomes everyone and should be a safe place to live for any immigrant, undocumented U.S. citizen, like, you know, live in harmony and peace, you know. But right now it's undocumented. They live in fear, and they feel like they don't have any future in this country, and there's no freedom.
If people are listening and they're interested in getting involved, is there anything that you would ask people to do or that they can do, or what's the best way that people can help?
There's so many ways that people, they can help. We have like volunteers from all over. Also some of the schools that they volunteer with us. Even the just simple thing, they can do research. You know, if someone is detained, can find out, like if we have the number of alien number, so we can find where is that person, right? And some other volunteers also, they're helping us to kind of organize or think a plan for a person who is detained, or get somebody a legal help for that person. But it's not only that. Also, our goal is to really stop any program that collaborate with police and ICE. Any program, it's dangerous for the community. And they can come in and help us to organize, I don't know, protests, so they can go with us on the street if they don't have anything to do. But there is many ways that they can participate. They can call us at the office. It's 503-233-6787. It's a boss in Portland, Oregon.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to
me.
Yeah,
no problem.
That was really, really great. So that is going to wrap up our show for this afternoon. If you missed any of this program, or if you want to catch some of our older Prison Pipeline programs, you can find them at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You can also like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Finally, a huge thank you to both of our guests tonight, Romeo Sosa and Jonathan Irwin, and many thanks to our engineer, Danielle.
Portland School Board elections are May 19th. What's your question?
Hi, this is Gwen Sullivan. the president of Portland Association of Teachers. Here is my question for school board candidates. Do you believe in management control over curriculum and curricular decisions? Or do you believe in empowering teachers to have academic freedom to best meet the needs of their students?
Tune in to KBOO April 27th through 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
Dear listeners, your community radio station could use a new refrigerator. We are looking for a fridge that is no larger than 28 inches deep by 28 inches wide. If you have one, please contact Ani Haynes at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or by email at volunteer@kboo.org to make arrangements. Thanks for helping us keep our food cold while we work hard at producing the best community news, public affairs, and music for the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world here at KBOO Portland.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's KBOO's evening broadcast of Hard Knock Radio, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.